are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Oui.
This is the Fundamentalist Podcast. Thank you one and all for tuning in, wherever you may be listening. I'm your host, dual guest, joined by Richard Donahue and Peter Bog. The year 2022 was a bit of a rebuilding year for the Fundamentalist Podcast. We only published 8 episodes. Goddamn, 4 of them were in the month of December. But we're making up for it in the year 2023. And the first salvo in that campaign of making up for it is a new segment. This is Hammer of the Underworld, where we're going to put a spotlight on our favorite underground releases, the cultist of the cult. And don't worry, we'll define that for you later on this episode. Each month, we'll be bringing you a selection of really underground albums that you probably haven't heard of. And if you did, maybe got lost in the shuffle from any year to start off. And then each month, we will feature a bevy of singles and albums that will be released in that month, just so you can be most up-to-date metalhead at the party. According to us, the Fundamentalist Podcast. At least that's going to be the mission. With that being said, welcome to Hammer of the Underworld.
Indeed.
I want to start off with what we've been listening to. Any underground release that you find from any year, any genre, it's totally fair game. I have 2 releases that I'd like to talk about today. This band called Maleficent with 2 T's. It is black metal from Los Angeles, California. They've been active since 2008. They have 2 full lengths, Maleficent, the self-titled, and Night of Eternal Darkness. And I'll say they have 2 EPs. Tell me if you can notice a naming pattern here. Night of the Crimson Stars and Night of the Pale Moon. Really raw shit. It's like if the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez, listened to black metal, this is what'd be going on. It's for fans of Kraft, Dark Throne. Didn't realize that Los Angeles got this gritty, dirty in their black metal aesthetic, but I'm here for it. Highly recommend you check it out. The most recent release came out in 2020, so it's not like there's no future in this band if you decide to be a fan. The second release is Chapel of Disease. It's a really odd pairing of old school death metal and 70s rock and roll that somehow works. And if you're scratching your head about that juxtaposition of genres, don't worry, you're not the only one. The vocals are straight out of the early days of death metal, as are the riffs, but it's really once the lead guitars come in and you hear the first notes and that ever so recognizable vintage guitar tone that was seen on so many 70s rock albums, you realize it's not your average run-of-the-mill OSDM worship. Only one album, 2018's, and As We Have Seen the Storm, we have embraced the eye, like some sort of New Orleanian waxing poetic about getting thumped by a hurricane. Those are my picks for what we've been listening to. Richard, what about you?
Following up on my province list of more black metal in 2023, and I decided to start with French black metal. So France is really a no metal country, and I discovered this band through Last.fm called Nehema. They put out 3 records in the late 90s and early 2000s, and they have 1 record on Spotify, the name of it being Requiem Tenebrae, off the now-defunct Oakenshield Records. It was released in March of 2004, and this is just really furious, straightforward black metal, though they're, I would say, conservative and tasteful use of keyboards. To where it fits the song, really adds a lot of atmosphere to it. Highly recommend it. The 2 songs that to me stuck out the most were the tracks In the Mists of Orion's Sword and my personal favorite, possibly the best of the whole record, Taken Away by the Torn Black Shroud. And the second release that really stuck out to me as well was a project from the guitarist and vocalist of the same band, which is still going, called, probably butcher this, Himin Jorg. That's HIMINBJORG. And this is more pagan, Bathory-inspired black metal, the Viking era. Very raw, but still has these like soaring, clean vocals in it. And record list was their demo, Where the Ravens Fly from 1997. If you're in that pagan style of black metal, it's fucking phenomenal. would highly recommend both of those French black metal masterpieces. What about yourself, Pete?
All right, so I want to go ahead and start off by saying that I recently saw a festival that's happening in the United Kingdom called Fortress Open Air. I think I posted it for you guys to take a look at.
Great lineup.
It's a pretty filthy lineup. I think Panopticon and Bolzer are the two headliners. But my God, if you like any kind of black metal or anything from, you know, anywhere in sniffing distance of the United Kingdom, they're pretty much going to be at this thing. I am certainly quite sad that I will almost decidedly not be able to make it over to North Yorkshire to check out some of these fantastic bands, most notably Nemeris, who is at this point a little bit of a podcast darling. But some of the other cool groups that are going to be there is A Forest of Stars, which I wanted to start off with. Another one that I have spoken about as being a big fan of, as one of my underground picks. I went ahead and went listen to Beware of the Sword You Cannot See from 2020. And, you know, this is decidedly a progressive black metal act. His vocals are sort of wailing and as probably as emo as you can really get within the genre, with, you know, and without sort of deflecting too many old heads here with that genre. There's a very emotional quality to it. There's a lot of different instrumentation that shows its face on this. There's huge ambient parts. It's pretty, if you take Panopticon and kind of distill it down to like another level of ambience and sort of progressiveness, it's kind of what you wind up with Forest of Stars. They're from the United Kingdom. Big fan of that group. You should check them out. I always like to work my way all the way down some of these big festival posters and take a look at some of these younger bands that are lower on the list. And I found myself latching onto this band, Wordstafe. They have a pretty cool logo that drew me to them, which is like sort of a tree with wings around it. And it's actually kind of interesting because it's almost war metal. You know, when I listened to it initially, I said that there were definitely some kind of Archgoat vibes around it, and that it's almost rudimentary black metal. With a lot of screaming and potentially even some grind influence, which is not what I was expecting, considering that their logo is, again, sort of kindred spirits with somebody like Panopticon. So I expected some pagan stuff in there, which is not what I got off of the EP, The Great Migrations, that they recently put out. They seem to be pretty young in their career, and so I'm definitely looking forward to what it is that they have to offer in the near future. And then thirdly, I don't even know exactly how to describe this band because I don't speak Cyrillic in any regard, but I found this great Russian band inspired by another band I was quite inspired by at the end of 2022, Ultar at the Gates of Dusk. I wanted to go ahead and dig into some Russian black metal. So I guess I'll go ahead and have to post the name of this band. It's T-H-E with the umlaut over it. T is the name of the group. And I have no clue how to pronounce the Cyrillic characters. There's just so many of them here. Backwards R. There's a thing in here that kind of looks like an upside down lowercase g. I don't say that to be disparaging. It's my own ignorance that I don't know how to pronounce this. And I did look it up and had very little guidance in that regard. But if you have the chance to go ahead and listen to it, it's got kind of a neon green album cover of a skeleton pulling its flesh off of itself. I posted about this and said, I think it's pretty cult. I liked it a lot, even though I will forgive them for the fact that they use the blown out vocal filter, which is one of my pet peeves because the riff is really cool. And overall, I've said that it was actually a nice invigoration of what I often like to characterize as the Burzum prison years sound. So there was that kind of Lord of the Rings key overall presence in most of the music, which I think is, well perceived amongst the cult black metal crowd. So once again, I don't want to disparage them by attempting to pronounce it. We'll go ahead and get that posted up, but I'm going back on what it is that I just said. It's definitely worth giving a listen. That's from Black Metal Promotions.
Regarding Fortress Festival, you also overlooked Wode, whose album Burn in Many Mirrors, fantastic, and as well as Ninkarsag, one of my favorite releases of 2021, Dread March of the Solemn Gods. That festival is less than $100 for the 3-day ticket, and there's camping on site. I think I have to do it.
Yeah,
nobody mentioned Winterfileth as well. Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is like a stacked bill.
Havok Runu from Finland, like a Bathory-inspired black metal. They're one of my favorites. They're great. Yeah, incredible lineup.
It's the largest collection of like folk black metal bands with none of the cringy ones.
I'm a little bit proud that our boys Panopticon, Austin Lund, is the one who actually gets to headline that bitch, right? He's not Absolutely. Even from there, and yet they're like, you know what, we'll bring him across the pond, as they say.
I mean,
he's sort of the figurehead of that whole sound.
He's a big deal in that subgenre, I would say. This leads perfectly into the conversation later that I want to have regarding like what actually defines underground. Is Panopticon still an underground band? Because they're not on the first or even second level of most metalhead knowledge.
I'll reserve my comments on that duel unless we're going to just jump right into the fire here.
You know what? Let's go ahead and do it because we can do releases at the end of the episode because this is going to be the main meat and potatoes. We need to define what is underground? What is the criteria for featuring bands on this particular segment? What defines underground to you? And Panopticon's a great starting point. So naturally, they're not tier one metal, which is your Metallicas, your Iron Maidens, your fucking stuff that even mainstream people would know, people who don't know metal.
Yeah.
Your tier twos would be anybody who likes metal can identify them. And I would actually put Lamb of God here.
Creator, God forbid.
Exodus.
Your tier two thrash bands like Cannibal Corpse, like maybe Mayhem. These names are kind of household.
Infamous. Pretty good if they've creeped up into tier two. I would probably say that's a little bit of a stretch personally.
Okay, so let's put Mayhem as a tier three band. They're certainly one of the most recognized black metal bands.
Yeah, they're definitely more infamous for their acts than their music.
So is Emperor a tier two or a tier three?
Tier three. I'd put him at tier three.
Okay, so and that's really well-known black metal. So are we starting the bidding at Panopticon is like a third level of underground or fourth, like lower third, upper fourth level of underground? Or would you even put another level of bands between there? Like, give me some examples.
Here's my question, Duel. Is this a scale of five, whereas five is the complete unknowns? Or, you know, is it just the bottomless pit at this point where, you know, we have 8, 9, 10, 11?
Yeah, I would say it's a five. I would say it's a five, just so we can keep it reasonable.
As a pretty avid metal fan, you introduced me to Panopticon. And so this could be my own metal ignorance, which I will just have to wear. But, you know, as of, 2018, I had never heard of Panopticon. Huge fan now. Obviously, I've heard every bit of music that Austin's ever released and met the guy myself. But I still have to put them in there knocking on, you know, they're knocking on the ceiling door, the attic space of a tier four into tier three.
Okay.
I would say we're doing you know, the Lord's work to try and spread the advocacy and the greatness of Panopticon at this point.
Absolutely. And if we're talking about tiers, just go by Spotify streams. Let's take this metric. Panopticon is probably at their most popular point, the high water mark of their relevancy in the metal scene. They have about 24,000 streams from unique listeners a month. By comparison, tier one band, maybe the band, Metallica, has 23 million.
God damn, that's a lot of fucking listens.
So let's go tier two band. Who did we say was a tier two band? Testament, Exodus.
Testament, Exodus.
Right, you said fans of metal, basically. So you have to basically be a self-avowed metal.
Like,
yeah, so I said Lamb of God. Lamb of God was the first one. Lamb of God, Spotify metrics, 2 million monthly listeners. Quite a lot. 2,100,000 plus. Pretty good. Who else did we say? Testament? Testament has 1,791,000. Also pretty sizable. Okay.
Good for Testament. Yeah, that's awesome. What I was expecting.
That's a nice tier. That's a nice tier. Let's go by example, Megadeth. Megadeth has just under 5 million. Where's the separate? So I guess Megadeth is a low tier one, borderline tier two. Like what else is, what are the other metrics? Household name, your streams,
household name, AKA streams.
Record sales aren't really a thing anymore.
That if you can name a song. You know, I hate to be that guy because it's become a little bit of a name three song. If you grab someone and say name a Metallica song, almost everybody who knows the name Metallica is going to be able to probably say Enter Sandman. And say name a Metallica a Megadeth track, they're not going to say Hangar 18. You know, they would struggle at that point to come up with a single name, I think, because they don't have that recognizable single necessarily relative to the mainstream fame that Metallica has had.
I think they do with Symphony of Destruction, but I'm not sure if they know the name of the song. But I think the riff itself is pretty recognizable. So who else did we say? Okay, who else would you consider to be...
Disturbed probably is in there.
Disturbed. I would,
up. System of a Down's probably a solid.
Kill Switch Engage. Yeah. Kill Switch Engage.
Disturbed is a tier one band. If you're going just by reach, like mainstream.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's look at those streaming numbers, bro.
9,412,000.
God damn.
I mean those words. Thank you.
Yeah. So double Megadeth. Double Megadeth.
Wow.
Yeah. System of a Down. 14,500,000.
Do a Kill Switch Engage. See what theirs are.
I'm gonna say half a million. No, oh wow, 2,144,000.
All right. That's a solid B list.
Yeah. Okay. So we're establishing our tier two, and of tier three, let's say Mayhem. Mayhem is 350,000 fucking posers.
Oh, so tier five is bottom of the barrel then. That's like lowest
Emperor,
of the low.
Emperor has 121,000.
Cannibal Corpse.
Dissection has 275,000. I didn't realize that Dissection was so much more popular than Emperor.
I could see that. The Emperor gets a little frilly for some people. Gets like poofy Jerry Seinfeld shirt for some people.
Cannibal Corpse is 703,000. So I would say Cannibal Corpse
upper
is
tier two.
Here's a question for you guys. Trivium, tier two or tier three? Where do they lie?
I would say tier two. They're very well known. They tour very consistently.
1,635,000. So a little bit just under Testament. Tier two. Maybe lower tier two. Lower to mid tier two, but tier two band as far as popularity and recognition. But that's not who we're talking about here. We're talking about the underground people. What's your if we're gonna say level three is bands like Mayhem and Emperor, is Panopticon lower three? Like what's your tier four?
I think Panopticon's probably a tier four band, and I don't say that to hate on them, but that's kinda the entry point of the underground in many ways.
Yeah, because they have got some media recognition and stuff, though they're not widely well known, but they have had some bigger records, at least in the kind of hipstery black metal scene.
Austin has purposefully avoided a lot of recognition and you know publicity as well as a part of his sort of we're going to use the word here for the cult for the first time, but you know his sort of cult perspective on the music.
So I mean, I guess in like number four is when you start getting to like you're really maybe influential, but not well-known at all types of death metal. I guess maybe like your Autopsies or maybe your even is Possessed a household name? Probably not. I mean,
no. So for old heads, yes, or someone like myself, but a lot of people know.
I was going to say, what about this one, you guys? Death, where do they lie?
815,000. Possessed, 54,000. Possessed, tier four band. Yeah. And then I guess like your tier five is your unknowns. Vince Sternis is like 50 fucking plays a month.
The band I mentioned in my underground pick, Nahima, found them a week ago. They were 159 monthly listens. So another band I found.
That qualifies. Tier five. Hell yeah.
Another band I found, Belados. They're like another folk pagan black metal band from France. They had like 1,008 listens monthly. So that's definitely a tier five.
If we're going to quantify it by streams, I would say between 0 and 5,000 is tier five band. And then between 5 and 75,000, 5 and 75,000 is tier four. And then 75,000 to 500,000, tier three. And then tier two would be from 500,000 to what? 5 million, and the tier one would be 5 million plus.
I would love to interview one of these groups that went from a 5,000 stream band to a 75,000 stream and see when that happens, because it's possible. I sort of in my head said that seems a little low, like for the floor of the tier two initially, because you know between 75,000 and 5,000, that's a pretty big gulf compared to some of the other ones, you know. Especially when you're up and coming. I feel like it could be more like 20,000 and 75,000.
Yeah.
But then again, some people say, you know, when you come into wealth, it's like as soon as you make your first million, your next five is really easy. So it could be like as soon as you hit that 5,000 mark, 75,000 is nothing. I don't really, because I don't have a group.
Ben, I'm a big fan of Immolation. Very well-known name, and I say popular. They have 76,285 listens per month.
All right, here's another one. What about Asphyx? That's another pretty underground, you know, Dutch old school death metal group. You know,
let's see,
just under 38,000.
Yeah, so 38,000.
So that's a tier four band then, according to that metric. Yeah.
So taking this all back, just because we were talking about Fortress Festival, for the sake of this podcast, there will be no mention going forward of any band above tier three. None.
For this segment.
This is Hammer of the Underworld. And by under, we mean under two, three, four, and five. The more of that time we spend out, we hang out with four and five, the outer ranges of complete and utter obscurity, the better. How twatty do you want to be about it? The more of a stickler you are, obviously, the less serious you can be taken. The fact that we're even debating this is obviously tongue-in-cheek in and of itself, but let's have some metrics for the fun of it. Let's define cult. Is that tier five only? Sorry, guys. You have a social media fucking presence. What is this?
What I immediately thought of is Mork. How cult is that band? Do they get annexed or do they get vetoed from this segment? Because I was a huge fan of that Cathedral record that they put out in 2021.
They have a record coming out, actually.
Nah, dude. 9,000 monthly listeners. Mork is currently a tier five band.
That band I mentioned, Heimenjorg. 459,000 monthly listeners. So definitely tier five.
It's kind of a shame because the production value on those recent Mork records too were like really, really great. You know, I guess it kind of goes to show that shitty production is a choice these days.
It's like the runes on the back of the album to let you know you're pagan. It's like you're displaying your death metal credentials. You're perking your peacock feathers, except they're all like nasty and like,
yeah, you said the runes on the back of the album cover. I was going to say the runes tattooed on the neck at that point.
Yeah.
And the amount of grandpa's guitars on the record as well.
Standard Mjolnir necklace. Drinking horn may or may not be included.
Do the Monomar throwing pit thing, which is super cringe. I've seen that video. That's bad.
Well, cringe is the order. Is the order of the day. We're debating what's cult here, sir.
I don't mean to detour and derail this to talk about the rowing pits, but like I go both ways on that because on one hand I'm like it's kind of awesome that they have their own form of sort of communal like pitting. I'm kind of with you though. Like there's one part of me that's like that's fucking lame, and then there's the other part of me that's like, dude, I would get down for that. Like I've never seen a Monomarth.
I would not.
I would fucking do it.
Did you never show Trevor Strand your muscles?
Yeah, I did. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Equally goofy. You just support the band more.
Yeah.
Because
no, I'm into it, dude. I would row. I would fucking row.
I would not. I would not be
caught. I would not. God damn. Muscles all day, but all right. Rowing in, not so much.
At least there's one of us. I don't even like a Monomarth. I think I'm the least fan of that band in between the three of us, too. So it's ironic.
Yeah.
I love that other people do it. Would not be caught dead. Anyway,
it's kind of D&D. D&D is cool, but LARPing, live action role play, that's a bridge too far for me. Can't do it.
Streaming metrics, streaming numbers are really harsh metrics to cut to be determining this on. What are some other things that makes a band tier five? The most the underground
amount of releases, like releases or like re-releases or vinyl pressings, cassette, CD, shit like that.
The fewer releases, the better, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Does the cover art have to look like shit or look like it was taken with a Polaroid unintentionally?
You know, I kind of disagree with that. And it kind of comes to the idea of cult being this thing that came about spontaneously. I think sometimes when you talk about these people that don't release a lot, the idea is that it was basically like, you know, two guys who happened to like hunker down in the same garage during one particularly bad winter, and lo and behold, a black metal record came out of it, you know? Which itself is a little bit of lore surrounding that. I mean, would you disagree, Joel?
Like, well, you know, when two nihilists love each other, you know?
It sounds so cute when you put it like that, but, you know, part of it is like, yeah, we don't really need album art. We just happen to have a Xerox machine that, you know, Olive's mother happened to have in the kitchen. It's funny, you know, I've talked about Circle of Tone, and he talked about how, like, the initial Bathory records had extra distortion because they had to record them using the amps turned down so low that the distortion, like, became extra, and that was part of what contributed to the black metal sound because they were recording in, like, somebody's mother's garage, you know? So I think that the idea of cult these days is a slight performance. And I know that there would be those who would disagree with me, but where do you stand on that idea?
No, 110%. Anybody who actually takes it seriously, I don't believe you. I 100% don't believe you. I think it's like kind of like Watain like puts it on for like their PR. Like they're not fucking serious.
And I'm really happy that you brought up Watain, because I was just about to go to Watain myself to say Watain. I felt like they kept it serious for so many years, and then this new record called "The Agony and Ecstasy of Watain." I feel like they finally kind of let the cat out of the bag that the whole thing is, I don't know what you say, theater. You know, it's performance. But
dude, they're real Satanists. Shut up, dude. Fucking
pink polos when they're not on stage, bro. The internet exists. The internet kills any like offstage persona or like cult status. Like,
okay. So is there a difference then between an up and coming band that plays extreme metal and a cult band? Because I think that's kind of what we're waffling with. We call them tier five in terms of streaming. But one of the things that I look at is there's a band that's not known, and then there's a band that is performing the idea of being underground. And I don't think that they're necessarily the same thing.
But it's all in the pursuit of an audience. Like Necro Butcher from Mayhem said if they did dead hadn't killed himself, they could have been as big as Metallica and they would have loved it. So obviously the point was not to end up a tier three band. They wanted to get as big as fucking possible, regardless of what the lore says, who thinks like there was these teenage black metal warlords fucking going at it.
You know what's actually like hilarious about that, and while I don't agree with you, and there's part of me that wants to bring up the fact that citing Necro Butcher's itself is a little bit contentious considering some of the interviews that he's given. For those who don't know, if you go back and check out that Vakken interview that he did.
Metal Headbangers Journey.
But anyways, I just want to bring it up to say that, you know, was that him simply posturing? Because again, he also claimed that he was out to murder Euronymous himself. It's very hard to take that seriously. And yet in so many ways that mold of thinking and that projection about sort of, you know, thinking that they were going to be that great and yet and still kind of dismissing it as well has kind of become the mold for so many young black metal bands. And again, you know, we look at Watain as being the biggest group, the most successful group that frankly took themselves that seriously.
Ape Dissection.
That. Yeah.
Do you think Norwegians are pissed that someone we're describing as a C-list metal star is probably one of the most prominent cultural exports in the arts?
We talked about this when I ranked the new Behemoth record in my top 10 metal records of the year. And I would love to hear what, you know, a real nationalist Norwegian would have to say about that. You know, are they going to be more mad about that, or are they going to be more mad about the fact that that's what we're talking about? It's hard to know. I can't speak on their behalf. I could see it both ways, you know?
Like the drunk Necro Butcher interview, like imagine like the president sees this, like, yeah, this is the guy we just gave the fucking $100,000 arts grant to. Who signed the check?
I think their prime minister is like 42, right? Have you seen interviews with that woman? She says they're going to be carbon free by like 2029 or something like that. I mean, it seems to be a fairly progressive nation. But, you know, they have a lot of oil money to go ahead and throw out those initiatives. So
if it's a social program, they'll figure it out. They've got it made over there. Anyway, back to the definition of cult. To your point, people who perform being underground or the people who are actually underground, I think they're all unintentionally underground. Because even in the pursuit of performing to be underground, you're still trying to break out of it. You still want to make money, or at least most people do.
Most people, yeah. Some people are showing just for the foot, like that band, Nunslaughter. They were one of the first bands, Hell's Headbanger signed. They literally have a million demos, splits, EPs. And I think this newest record they put out, Red is the Color of Death or something like that, was their most popular record. Yet their Spotify metrics are fucking nothing. Yet they did it over 20 years. They've kept on doing it. They don't give a shit. So,
like if one guy records his fucking vampiric black metal project and just drops it on Bandcamp and fucks off, you telling me if it blows up and gets 10 billion fucking plays, he's not going to put out more music? Maybe get some album artwork? Maybe make it sound nice later? I mean, I just don't think that this underground or cult status is ever intentional, or at least meant to last forever for anybody.
Back in the day, you know, in the 80s and stuff, I think it was more authentic. Like, you had the first Sodom record and the Sign of Evil. It sounds like it's proto black metal. It's primitive fucking caveman metal. But that was just because of, you know, their lack of being able to play. They were heavily supported by Venom. They couldn't really play their instruments. You know, they didn't have money for proper production. That's just how it turned out. It was authentic. Someone up there with Hellhammer and shit like that, some of the best proto black metal ever. But then you have a band now that can do that. And yeah, they may be about that spirit, so to speak, but it could also be seen as inauthentic because you could easily sound fucking great by comparison, but you're willingly choosing to sound like shit.
This is true. All right, back to it. Hard metrics. Everyone just give your one metric for being tier five. I say between zero, or what we say, 10,000 streams, as far as your streaming metrics go, and almost no recognizability in the public eye. Almost none. It's tier five.
All right. For me, I thought a lot about this in terms of what I actually consider cult metrics. And I think that duration between releases is more important for me, because you can make something sound great. It's not that hard these days. If you have a little bit of deafness with you know, any of these programs that you can pirate online, you can make a metal record sound pretty good. And, you know, the intentional use of the blown out vocal filter at this point is a stylistic decision. But in order to qualify, you can't be trying to play the social media game, which is, as we've talked about, releasing a cover every, you know, 5 months, keeping ultimate engagement. I think that in order to be considered cult, to me, it's not about sounding bad. It's about releasing music when artistic inspiration strikes, essentially. And so that's what I would consider. I know we said tier five, we were rating metrics before, but in terms of what I would think of as an actual cult band, it is kind of the project status unknown. You know, you got maybe, you know, two EPs and you have no fucking clue if the third one is coming or if it's going to be an actual full length or it could be a double album. That's kind of the way that I look at it these days.
And then tier four would be obviously just a little bit above that. There's probably a ton of bands that we could describe as tier four. Earlier in the episode, I said 0 to 10,000 for tier five. It was 0 to 5,000. And then tier four was 5 to 75 is what I said. And I think a lot of bands are in there. A lot of bands that we really love. Like Flesh God Apocalypse actually probably is a little bit more just by streaming metrics. But bands like, I don't know, Cattle Decapitation, Asphyx, I think that we mentioned earlier. There's a lot of metal darlings that'll end up being tier four across all subgenres. And I think that's pretty standard. I think actually this podcast mostly hangs out with tier four bands, as is. Maybe some tier threes, although not gonna lie, we obviously touch on the tier one bands because they're fucking huge and that's just what they do. They have their fingers in everything. But
we grew up on them too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I came out of the womb listening to the first Mayhem demo at Desolation of a the first Morbid Angel record. Came out with that shit, you know. There's one before that was the release. It's called Something of Abominations. Like, it's a very shitty sounding record. Some of those records eventually became the first Morbid Angel record. But a lot of the true cult guys, like, you know, everything after that, Morbid Angel sold the fuck out.
So to wrap up, so we have the tiers. Each tier is separated by hard metrics such as streaming numbers, as well as recognizability in the public sphere. Anything else?
That seems like the big ones to me, honestly.
I will address some of the aesthetic considerations that come along with. I think a lot of it's nonsense, personally. I know that people love it when it comes to the Norwegian and especially the black metal scene. I've been on the air before saying that I think corpse paint is kind of lame. I would never do it. I don't hate on bands for it. I've actually come to just accept it as a part of certain groups' acts, but I respect also younger bands like, say, Wayfarer for not doing it. And yet then we go to find out that all of those guys are members of
the Drums of Blood Incantation of Wayfarer.
Stormkeep. You know, they have their other band, Stormkeep, and I think that they do corpse paint in that groups. So it's hard to say, but I will go ahead and kind of dismiss the aesthetic considerations, because I don't think that anything about having a black and white album cover, anything about doing corpse paint has anything to do with it. I think that for me, that is heavy metal kitsch.
icing on the cake for me personally.
Some people are into it. It's got nothing to do with the music at the end of the day. And so I would encourage everybody else to sort of dismiss that as well.
Well, yeah, I hope I think the listeners all know that was a mostly tongue-in-cheek conversation as far as actual being cults and whether or not it actually fucking matters. Just more trying to establish an underground hierarchy here for this Hammer of the Underworld segment. But as you said earlier about the people who kind of perform being underground, I think if you're intentionally sounding like dog shit, I think you actually already said this, and trying to look like it too. I mean, that's definitely a performative measure. That's how you're selling yourself.
Which, it's an advertising gimmick, which is kind of depressing when it comes to music, but I mean, it's a objective reality.
I'd probably listen to it if your black metal release has looks like dog shit on the cover in 2023.
Yeah, a bit more appealing because a lot of black metal is very overproduced.
For Mork, it works for Ariana Grande.
It's so. Like, wow, this looks like shit. Play. Okay, so there's our criteria. There's our criteria covered. We'll probably amend it, knowing us going forward as the segment evolves. But there you are. What we are going to be considering when we decide for bands to be covered on this episode, tier 3 and below. But we're going to try to hang out in 4. And I even have a level 5 pick for you here coming up in this next segment, where we highlight all of the releases that caught our eye this month from bands that either we have a deep knowledge of or we may have finally checked out when we saw them on the release radar for this month. So coming out this month in January, here are some singles and albums that I am really looking forward to. Imperium Decadence has a new album, Into Sorrow Evermore. This is a black metal band.
Check them out.
This is a black metal band from Germany. The album releases on the 20th of this month. There's two singles out from this record, November Monument and Memories, A Raging River. You can find this record courtesy of Napalm Records. A new single was released from anarcho black metal band Dawn Raid. Their single Ancient Light from their upcoming release To Know the Light will be released in March 2023. This is black metal from the UK on Prosthetic Records. Also, more black metal, surprise, surprise. This is Blaze of Sorrow, this time from Italy. They have a single called Flammo from their upcoming release, Voltus Fate, which will be released on March 31st. You can find the YouTube video courtesy of Black Metal Promotion. From the United States, Lamp of Murmur, they have a new single release, Conqueror Beyond the Frenzied Fog, and holy shit, it slaps. Check this shit out. They're a little bit of a black metal darling right now, but for very good reason. They have a new album, March 26th, Saturnian Bloodstorm. And finally, the promised tier 5 band. I have Alieria and their album release, Eris, which just came out on the 13th of January. There's a single, the final track on the album, called Corella's Ascent. This is symphonic black metal from Brazil. And the description of them is as follows: Cradle of Filth, Flesh God Apocalypse, and System of a Down.
My head is spinning.
This has no right to exist. No right for it to work. No right for it to work, but it does. I'll show you. I'll share the link with y'all at the end of the episode. You should all should check this out. Alieria, Alyiria, 255 monthly listens on Spotify, and a YouTube channel with less than 150 subscriptions. That, my friends, is my cult release radar for January 2023. Gentlemen, if you have anything to contribute here, now is the time.
I have one. That's it. And that would be Ahab, the originally Funeral Doom, now kind of post-metal slash Funeral Doom band. Their newest album, which was just released this past Friday, called The Coral Tombs. But the first two singles, the first one being Colossus of the Liquid Graves, which has the vocalist of Ulthe doing some guest vocals on it. This starts off very... It starts off very brutal Funeral Doom. Then it goes in these very dramatic, operatic vocals, which they've done since their last record, The Boats of the Glen Currig, which was, I believe, something with Moby Dick. store concept record wise. And this new record is based on Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. But the opening single was great. And the other single, Lisa off this record, very much a mouthful. Professor Aronnax's Descent into the Vast Oceans. another really killer track. The record, I haven't got a chance to list the whole record, but both these singles are pretty much everything you would want to hear of this current era of Ahab. If you like both the Glenn Craig, you will like this record. If you're more of a fan of their old school stuff, like Calls of the Wretched Sea, you probably won't really care for this. But if you like their newer, modern version of the band, I would highly recommend this, and I can't wait to review it, hopefully, in the next coming weeks for another episode. We shall see.
Bog, do you have anything to contribute here?
No.
That's going to do it for this inaugural episode of Hammer of the Underworld. We will be back next month at the end with the releases for February, as well as what we've been listening to, and hopefully a surprise or two. With that being said, thank you to my co-host, Richard Donahue.
Appreciate you.
And Peter Bog.
Roll Tide.
We will be back throughout 2023 with new segments like this. Lots more recorded content this year in 2023 than in 2022, we promise. Should be some new solo content coming from Richard and Peter as well.
100%.
As well as a new edition of Under the Knife. Stay tuned for all that and more in the year 2023. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.